You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Welcome to Heritage Voices, episode 22. I'm Jessica Uquinto, and I'll be your host today. And today we are talking about the Greater Chaco landscape. And this interview, it's potentially going to be in two parts. It looks like we might have two interviews, one myself and one possibly done by Lyle Belenko, my co-host. So stay tuned. We'll see what happens. But before we begin, I'd like to honor and acknowledge the Pueblo peoples on whose ancestral lands I'm recording today, as well as the Nooch or Ute peoples on whose treaty lands I'm recording today, as well as the fact that this area is also part of the Dene Taw. So today I'm really honored and humbled to have my two guests here in the studio today. First, I have former governor of Isleta Pueblo and All Pueblo Council of Governors Chairman, Edward Paul Torres.
Good morning. My name is E. Paul Torres, and I am from the Pueblo of Isleta, former governor, former lieutenant governor, and currently the chairman of the All Pueblo Council of Governors.
All right, thank you. And our second guest today is former Pueblo of Tizuki governor and current co-chair of the All Pueblo Council of Governors Natural Resources Committee, Mark Mitchell.
Good morning, and thank you for having us.
Good morning. So you guys are recording in D.C. right now. What brings you to D.C.?
We're here to lobby for the protection of the Chaco Canyon area and basically the landscape in which this area is located. The reason why we're really here is to make sure that the area around Chaco is protected and free of wells, oil wells and gas pads and oil pads and what have you.
So is there something particular happening at this moment that initiated this journey?
This issue has been going on for quite some time. And we, the Pueblos, really recognized the fact that the landscape of the Chaco area was being threatened by way of lease sales by BLM so that companies can come in and frack for oil and gas. But the issue really came to be when we noticed that sites, TCPs, traditional cultural places, were being impacted by these sites, the locations of the well pads and what have you. Mm-hmm. And so the issue we had was how do we protect these sites, because they're so close to home and dear to us that we needed to do something to protect the whole area. And again, the area that we're talking about is the Chaco landscape in, western central part of New Mexico. The landscape yields and holds all kinds of TCPs, traditional cultural places. Mm-hmm. And the Chaco itself is a World Heritage Center. And so the concern there was, if fracking is done at whatever depth it's being done and extract the oil and gas, which supports the upper layer, how are we assured that in years to come that this area is not gonna fall in? And the Chaco itself, the ruins that are out there are irreplaceable. And that's one of the things that we were homing in on, is that this place is irreplaceable, but most importantly, it's one of many sites that is a traditional site. Again, as we stated before, or as I stated before, that these are the footprints of our ancestors, and we're willing to share with the general public, but we want to make sure that the general landscape around the Chaco is also protected. And there's a lot of issues under that, like for instance, a company coming in to frack and then flaring. What are the impacts to the environment, the wildlife, the plant life, and most importantly, the human life? So those are some of the reasons why we're here in DC lobbying and making sure that we bring awareness to everybody, and most importantly, to protect not only this site, but others that are being threatened.
So why is it important? So a lot of people would say, well, but Chaco is already protected. It's in a national park. So why is it so important to make sure that the surrounding area is included as well?
For the main reason that was stated before is that, again, it's hard to explain the tribal religion, but this is the best I can do, is we're tied into the land. Mm-hmm. And in the lands, in the landscape, in the geographical areas, that's where these sites are located. And our religion is still alive. We practice it every day. Each Pueblo is different and unique to their religion. And it's that mere reason why we need to be out there to advocate protection. And yes, the Chaco is the Chaco area is a national monument, yes, but also at this level, there seems to be a threat coming to, I guess, declassify it and not protect it. So we want to advocate already and let them know that, you know, yes, please keep it protected, but also making sure that the outer regions and the landscape is also protected.
And one thing that the Pueblos and the other tribes in New Mexico are concerned with is there is nothing set in stone as far as the protection of Chaco. There are many oil wells out there, and they are just getting closer and closer and closer. And with the technology now, they are drilling horizontally, not just vertically. So there is a bill that is being introduced by Senator Udall and Senator Heinrich that we are asking the different people, congressional people that we've met with to address sooner than later, so that protection can be put in place that will be set in stone. But right now there is nothing there that will protect Chaco, and we're hearing that they're even looking at getting closer than the cultural zone that's there and closer to the monument.
So what has that been like? What has that been like working with the two senators, and how receptive have people been to your trip in DC?
The reception has been good. We feel that the people that we have met with are concerned also, and the Department of Interior has or is putting a plan in place, and the Bureau of Land Management, the people that we met with there, want to work with us as far as putting something in place, a presentation where the tribes can get in there and do a survey on the perimeter of the Chaco area to make sure that these areas, the areas that are found will also be protected.
Great. And that was the national BLM that you were speaking with?
Yes.
That's great. Former Governor Mitchell, did you have anything you wanted to add to that about the reception in DC?
Oh, yeah. As always, this is not our first trip up here. As tribal governments, we've come up here to lobby the Hill and our congressional folks and others. And so this was good. The reception was well taken. Nobody gave us any hardship. Everybody sat and listened to our concerns. And the chairman stated, the New Mexico senators are working on our behalf to protect this area, not only them, but we're making sure that the other senators and representatives and congressional folks that we were meeting, we educated them as to how things are unfolding there and back in New Mexico, and making sure that they understand, both sides of the story. But on our particular end, we're wanting to make sure, because of as natives, our ancestors occupied the area. And we always say, since time immemorial, in today's technology, someone could maybe carbon date things and come back to maybe 1200 AD or 500 BC or that type of thing. But with those technologies, and, we could honestly say that the area has been inhabited by our ancestors since that time. And so, to kind of give you a picture in your mind's eye, that the folks that we've talked to, they were really receptive to what's happening out there on the landscape. So in general, yeah, we were well received. People are interested in exactly what's going on, and maybe have concerns of additional information and what have you. So yeah, everything was well received.
Good. Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
So obviously this has been a long process with this battle for the greater Chaco landscape. And I'm sure that you two have been involved for a long time, not just obviously this DC visit. So based on the whole range of experience from Chaco, and then also if you've worked on these kinds of projects in other places as well, we do have a decent amount of land manager listeners, federal agencies, state, local, et cetera. What would be recommendations that you would give to them as far as tribal consultation or just working more collaboratively with tribes in general about how these kinds of processes could be improved?
Well, we made it very clear when we met with the Department of Interior and the Bureau of Land Management that we are ready to work together with these agencies, government to government relations, to address the issues, to work together to put the protections in place that are needed. And we're ready. We were already talking about setting up, making a plan to take it step by step so we can get started sooner than later to do a survey, class three survey, which means we put people on the ground and these people are traditional people where they can go out there and look for the things that they know what they're looking for as far as shrines or sacred sites and on and on. So we're ready to do that. And we made it clear to the agencies that that's what we want to do.
Mm. Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
The other thing that we were talking about was, again, tribal governments are not the general public. So in New Mexico, the pueblos are considered tribal governments. I'm pretty sure all the Native nations across this country are in the same predicament as tribal governments.
Right.
And I think that's the first thing that you all need to accept is that, one, we're not the general public. We're government, tribal government. We have the same issues as anybody else, but I think that's the first thing that we need to do. Secondly, as Chairman has stated, that we're willing to work hand in hand with everyone, so long as a project that's coming up on the horizon, that the tribes are at the table, not after all the documents have already been vetted and gone through its process, and then after that bring in the tribes. I think that's a connection. As stated yesterday, we were letting some folks know because they were telling us already that this process has already gone through their system and now we're ready for public comment. And that's when we told them that's the misconnect because we need to be at the table. As Chairman said, we have folks that can really identify things from the tribal perspective. And again, we're wanting to work to protect these sites and making sure that we're doing this for our futures, future leaders, the unborn. Because again, we always say that what we enjoy today, that the unborn should enjoy the same amenities that we have.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, on that note, we are going to take our first break.
This network is listener supported. We're trying to move away from paid advertising while also creating new shows and supporting the ones we have. Every little dime we make goes back into the network and improving show quality. So become a member today at www.arcpodnet.com/members to show your support, get some extras, and be a benefactor for archaeological education. Members get stickers, a coffee mug, a t-shirt, bonus content, early access to episodes, a private Slack team to talk to other members and the hosts, and full access to training on Team Black over at arccert.black. So check out our memberships at www.arcpodnet.com/members today and support archaeological education. That's www.arcpodnet.com/members. Now back to the show.
All right. And we are back. So we were just talking about what you would recommend to federal agencies as far as how they could better work with tribes. And you were just mentioning sovereignty and making sure they realized that it was a government-to-government relationship as opposed to the general public or other stakeholder groups.
Correct.
But I'm curious also, as nations, what would you recommend to other nations facing these similar challenges or these similar efforts that you guys are working with fighting for the greater Chaco landscape?
My advice would be don't give up. Don't ever give up because these are the footprints of our ancestors. There's a reason why things are out there. And yes, while we may depend on the current amenities, these items and these places were placed there not by us today, but those that occupied the area since this nation, before this nation was a nation. We had already had Native indigenous peoples from one ocean to another. And so my advice is don't give up. Don't ever give up.
Chairman Torres, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Yes, I think that my advice would be that the tribes get involved right away on the front end. When they hear about it from whomever it might be, find out what's going on, get involved, insist on getting consultations in place because that's what's left out is the consultation part. And if we don't get consulted, we don't know what's going on. And like Governor Mitchell is saying, we get the report after everything is completed without being consulted, and that's not the way it's supposed to work. Not with government to government relationships. So I would say, whatever issue it might be, as soon as you find out, get people working on it and get involved right away. And I know a lot of tribes don't do that, and sometimes you can't do it for whatever reason, but it needs to be done.
Which brings me to my next question. So obviously, to anyone in the Southwest, everybody knows that the Pueblo people and the Navajo people have a very long, complicated history with each other, and that it has been very contentious in a lot of ways, but that you guys have come together over issues like Chaco and Bear's Ears in a really unprecedented way. So could you talk a little bit about how that happened and maybe why that happened?
2 years ago, we had a historical meeting. And when I say we, I'm talking about the All Pueblo Council, had a historical meeting with the Navajo Nation at the Indian Pueblo Cultural Center about the Chaco issue. We met with President Begay, Vice President Nez, and some of his staff, and we talked about the issues, and we all agreed, we all got on the same page as far as the protection of the Chaco region, and had a very good conversation, talked a little bit about other things that we should unite on, and I think the key to tribes in New Mexico would be to unite with the Pueblos, the two Apache tribes, the Navajo Nation. We should all be united. We're all brothers. You know, what happened. We weren't involved in that. The history, and you know, but now is a different time. And I think if the tribes were all united in New Mexico, it would be a good thing to address issues like the one we're addressing now. And you know, all the tribes are involved in the Chaco region, not just the Pueblos. We know that. So I think we all need to work together.
Yeah, we've met with the Navajo Nation, and I think we all have similarities when it comes to the protection of sites, not just in the Chaco or the Bears Ears area. There's other sites, other places, and as Determined stated, yes, we do need to come together and work together for the common good of protecting these sites. As stated earlier, in these current days, we did not put these things up, but we're taught where they're at, and we're taught to protect these sites, and it's part of our religion, and just making sure that we work closely with the agencies, the federal agencies, the state agencies, to making sure that we're all on the same page. Because to us, I think it would behoove the agencies to just reach out and say, okay, this is when we're meeting. We need to bring you up to speed on certain things and projects that are coming up, which may impact you all. And I think that's better in the long run, because it's cost saving, it's time management, and rather than butting heads down the road, we can all work together to achieve everybody's goal as a win-win situation and protecting the sites and moving forward.
Another thing that I guess I have heard several times, and I'd be curious to hear your perspectives on, is there are a lot of people who say things like, you know, but the tribes have oil and gas drilling on the reservation. And, you know, there's drilling, for example, on the Ute reservations and on the Navajo reservation. And how do you explain to people what the difference is with protecting this particular area, or just how it's different, I guess?
From my point of view, I guess this question will be directed to the Navajo Nation, because they know their TCPs and where they're located. And it's up to each tribal government to move forward on their own endeavors. But the difference is that this is Chaco Canyon, a unique area, a protected area, and making sure that, you know, that the Chaco is there for everybody to come and see. Whereas a tribe, they have their own government, they have their own vision of how they're going to support their people. And if tribes do have this, that's their call. And we have this understanding amongst the tribes that as governments, we respect each other, and we want to make sure that when things like this happen in a common area like the Chaco, that we all come together. And so that will be my answer to what you're asking. But really, the answer would really come from the Navajo Nation.
Yeah, I think that's an important part of sovereignty that people sometimes want to forget, I guess, is the economic sovereignty. That sovereignty is more than just creating your own laws. It's that self-determination aspect as well. Did you have anything that you wanted to add to that, Chairman Torres?
We've been here in D.C. the whole week, meeting after meeting, talking about protection of Chaco. And I've been thinking to myself, I wish some people would understand that everything is not about money. Like, these national monuments need protection. Chaco needs protection. Why? Because that's where our ancestors lived. There's still live places there, and, you know, the tribes go there on pilgrimages and things like that. So, you know, if a tribe has natural resources like oil or natural gas or whatever, they're not going to put a well on right next to a shrine or on top of a shrine or next to, we know that. That's not going to happen. So they make the decisions on their own where they place these oil wells or whatever it might be, because they need the money to survive, as far as money for their people, for their services, and on and on and on. So it, like Governor Mitchell was saying, it's their call on their economic future. But and they also know that everything is not about money. There's some things like what we're talking about, that's not about money. It's about keeping things the way our ancestors left them for our kids and their kids and their kids and from now on. And that's what, that's the point we're trying to get across to everybody in the conversations that we're having.
So I'm curious, I imagine that you two have been to Chaco itself a good number of times with all of this. What have your personal experiences been like there, if that's something that you're okay with talking about?
I think they're just amazing places, and you know it. When you visit these places, it makes you wonder about our people that lived there and the way they survived and how strong they were. Their beliefs were very strong, and lots of other things, you know. It's just amazing.
On my part, as far as visiting Chaco, it's always, like Chairman is saying, it's not the same every time you go. Experience different things, see different things. By that, I mean, one day the weather could be extremely hot, and the next time you go, and, you know, all of a sudden it's starting to rain, and it's nice and cool, and people are enjoying themselves and asking questions about the architecture of the buildings and wondering how many people lived here and what was their life like during that time. And we go there to educate ourselves, educate the children that from our prospective villages, and try to instill in them that these are sites that we're tied into. When I say tied into, I'm talking about actually having people migrating from there into the current day Pueblos back in the day. Stories about how the Pueblos and the Chaco people were constantly trading whatever they needed to trade, and vice versa. Those people coming to our Pueblos and back in the day and doing the same thing, trading and just networking, in other words, in current times. And so to us and to myself, when I go out there, that's part of the reason, but the other part is to go out and pray for a safer world, to make sure that whatever that's happening overseas and there's conflicts, that they find remedy, that you know, everyday life, give us the health and knowledge and welfare for everyone to understand. And you know, just generally, those are the prayers that I do, and I just want to make sure that the area, not only Chaco, all the sites are protected for future generations to come. As stated earlier, again, it's if you haven't been there, you know, and go there with an open mind and open heart, with no animosity, no pressure on yourselves, and you'll come out of there with, I guess, enlightenment to your own personal self. But go there with respect is all we ask.
Yeah, absolutely. And what does that respect look like?
Well, I'm going to give you an incident where I was out there, and it happened to be like on a close to a solstice, and we were out there just visiting because we were working with Chaco and referencing their small museum and what was right to disclose or exhibit. And so we had gone out there to see that, but by the same token, we decided to take a tour of the area. And to me, it was heartbreaking to see non-natives coming in there and bringing outside items that don't clash with the area. What I'm talking about is like ribbons and other stuff that's probably their religion. And one thing that struck me odd was a can we found with ashes, human ashes of someone's loved one that was there. And that was heartbreaking because, you know, to me, that was totally wrong for someone to do that. Right then, that action is what I consider to be disrespectful. And, you know, not having that knowledge of that individual coming there and doing that, I don't know what the intent was. Maybe they were praying, and I don't know. All kinds of thought processes went through my mind. And so, yeah, that's one of the things that I took to heart personally, thinking, well, now what do we do with this? What does the park staff do with these remains? And that, to me, in our religion, we can't once an individual passes, we can't unearth them. We can't do any of that stuff. So it was, for me, it was taboo to not even touch the item. They asked me, what do I do? What do we do? And I basically referred them, well, what have you done in the past? Do you reach out to those individuals that came in? Is there a list that people sign into? I don't know. I told them I'm lost just like you, but it was heartbreaking for me to experience that. So that's, in my eyes, is a thing of disrespect.
On that note, it's kind of an odd note to take a break on, but it's about that time, so we will be right back.
Interested in archaeology? Want to hear from experts in the field about the latest discoveries and interpretations? Check out the Archaeology Show every other Saturday and let hosts Chris Webster and April Camp Whitaker take you deeper into the story. Check out the Archaeology Show at www.archpodnet.com/archaeology and subscribe, rate, and comment on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and the Google Music Store. That's www.archpodnet.com/archaeology. Now back to the show.
All right, and we are back. So just to add on to what we were just finishing out there real quick, I do just want to add that, like, former chairman, former governor Mitchell was saying that not only is it disrespectful in the ways that he mentioned, but also leaving ashes is also disrespectful to a lot of the staff there is Navajo as well, and culturally for them as well, it's not appropriate to be interacting with human remains, or ancestors. So putting a maintenance person, for example, in the position of having to deal with the situation is just, it's not very respectful. So keep that in mind. If that was something you were thinking about doing, that it's not a respectful way to approach either the Associated Tribes or the staff itself. All right. So moving on to other topics. What have you found to be most successful in these efforts? Or what would you advise people who are trying to do collaborative projects on how to work together in the future? Either of those?
First of all, I think that the Pueblos addressing this issue with Chaco and the federal government is unique because, as we've stated more than once, it's a government-to-government relationship. So, and we have talked about protecting other monuments also, We addressed the bear's ears issue a little bit. I think going forward, we need to make sure that the federal government knows that they have the trust responsibility, and there are laws in place that they need to protect the sites where our ancestors made their footprint. And as I stated earlier, it's not just for us, it's for our children and their children and their children. So it is so important. I think that this trip to D.C. this week, we've been successful of getting the message to the people that we have visited. And as I stated earlier, we're anxious to work with the BLM and the Department of Interior to do our part on getting things in place where we know that we'll have the protection that is needed. And this is just the Chaco area, but there are other areas that need the same thing. So the work is just beginning.
As far as this particular issue, I have not gauged if it was successful or not, because we're right just starting out. But I think one of the things that I would advise tribes and the federal agencies and state agencies is that, yes, continue if you haven't been reaching out to the tribes, or if you have, continue doing that, even a phone call, or if you're driving by, you know, just to pop in and say, did you all receive this and this, because there's a project coming up and this is what we want to do. We want to have the tribal government at the table so they understand what's happening. And again, it all falls back to budgeting, cost effectiveness of a project, and the tribes would feel a lot better knowing that certain sites are avoided, certain things that are out there that are avoided. We've recommended a few things like ground penetrating radar if possible, because that would assist in identifying burial sites that may be out there, other things of that nature. So, you know, I would recommend those agencies continue, or if they haven't, to reach out to the tribes. It's just like basically the tribes are open to calls and what have you. We can set up meetings and get folks on and start the meetings and making sure that, you know, the consultation process happens. Now, in the past, when tribes do consult, and it's sad to say this, that some of the agencies, it's more of a, okay, we've met our policies, let's check it off and move forward. Because there's one of the things that we keep asking is, so you're asking for our input, but we never see it in your policy. We never see the tribe recommended this, or whoever it is, the tribe recommended to do this and do that. This way, for that particular project, the tribe can be satisfied that, okay, they did take a consultation and it was meaningful, by way of showing that, okay, all their recommendations and their edits or other things of that nature are incorporated into that agency's policy. This way, you know, you're that agency can continue moving forward with a project so long as the tribes are there to assist. And I think that's the common goal here in this issue with the Chaco is that, okay, you know, you need to bring the tribes at the to the table so that we can see what you're doing, what plans are out there, and recommend things and get boots on the ground, as stated earlier, so that the tribal side can assist, because as the archaeologists are out there for a company, they're not cognizant of traditional issues, traditional locations, but an individual or individuals of a tribe are, and they know what they're looking for. They know what needs to happen. So we need to not butt heads, but work together collaboratively to get the project done. And I think that's all we're asking for. But the main issue is the protection overall, because again, as stated, these are still sites that are being visited by indigenous folks, Pueblo people. And we have to continue doing this because that's part of our religion as we move forward.
For our listeners, so if they are really excited and riled up from this episode and really want to do something about this issue, what would you recommend? What would be helpful for your efforts for our listeners to do, first of all? And second of all, if they're interested in learning more, are there any, you know, websites or different places that they can go to learn more about the greater Chaco landscape efforts or just Chaco in general? So yeah, so what can our listeners do and where can they learn more?
We at the All Pueblo Council of Governors do not have a website for just that one issue as far as Chaco, protection of Chaco. We don't have that. We address pretty much a lot of issues that the Pueblos have within their Pueblos and address them at our meetings, whether it be under executive session or open meeting. But as far as somebody chiming in on just this one issue that the All Pueblo Council is addressing, we don't have a website for that. It doesn't mean we're not going to have one in the future. We have our Natural Resources Committee that is heading up this issue. Governor Mitchell and Governor Kurt Riley are the co-chairs for the Natural Resources Committee. So, you know, I think that if somebody wants certain information about this, then they can call the All Pueblo Council of Governors office and get the number for Governor Mitchell or Governor Riley and talk to them or myself.
Also, if they feel compassionate about this issue, I would recommend that they would call our congressional folks and let them know that they're in support of the protection of the culture, Chaco Canyon itself, or even calling the Chaco Canyon staff themselves to find out a little bit more information as to what impacts are happening to the area. And as Chairman stated, myself and current Governor Kurt Riley are the co-chairs of the Natural Resources Committee, and this is just one issue we're addressing, and we're trying to get our staff to do all the research to making sure that everything is whatever people need, that we have that information moving forward. So those are my recommendations, but by the same token, you know, we also understand and realize that there are directives from others for development and protection, development of what's happening around the Chaco area, and we're willing to sit and, you know, consult about issues and moving forward. And maybe we might also do some outreach, but I know there's some organizations that are out there, have been out there assisting and moving forward with what trying to bring awareness of supporting and protecting the Chaco at this time. So yeah, those are some of the things that I would recommend.
Right. I think Archaeology Southwest might be one of them.
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you might check their website as well. I think they have updates on there about what they're working on with Greater Chaco Landscape. And then obviously you can always also go to the National Park Service Chaco Canyon website as well. And we can put those and the All Pueblo Council of Governors website in the show notes so people can find them easy.
Sure.
All right. Well, did either of you have anything that you feel like you wanted to add that we missed, Chairman Torres or former Governor Mitchell?
I think we covered all of it. We've answered your questions as best that we can. I myself don't have anything to add.
All right. Well, thank you so much to both of you for being here. It was a true honor.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
The CRM Archaeology Podcast brings together a panel of cultural resource management professionals to discuss the issues that really matter to the profession. Find out about networking strategies, job hunting, graduate programs, and much more. We'll often feature interviews with college professors, CRM business owners, and experts as well. Check out the show on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/CRM Arc Podcast.
Hey, podcast fans and digital archaeologists. Have you heard about WildNote? It's a data collection app that works online or offline on your smartphone or tablet, iOS or Android. It allows you to collect field data easily, manage data efficiently, and generate data reports and site records effortlessly. We have a growing list of state site forms built in for your use and some generic forms that will work anywhere. Check out the shovel testing and photograph forms. You can get a free all-access 30-day trial today by going to wildnoteapp.com. That's wildnoteapp.com for your free 30-day trial. Now back to the show.
All right, and we are back. So as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, we are doing two different episodes, or not episodes, I should say two different recordings for this episode. So the first part, as you obviously already know, was my interview with Chairman Torres and former Governor Mitchell. And the second part, Lyle actually ended up not being able to make it. He was called out on some tribal business. But I'm going to be interviewing Keegan King, who is an advocate for Acoma Pueblo and who has been working on this Greater Chaco Landscape project effort, I guess you should say. So Keegan, if you wouldn't mind to get us started talking about how you got into this kind of work in the first place, and then second, why this particular effort?
Sure. Thank you for having us. The governors have been working on this issue for quite a while now, and I first got involved with some of the sacred sites advocacy. I think right out of high school, I'm from Acoma Pueblo, but my family moved to Albuquerque, and at the time, the city was considering developing the Petroglyph National Monument, and so, you know, that was sort of an important moment in you know, in my life, and I got involved with the campaign and the fight to protect Petroglyph National Monument. And so through that, I've always had an interest in other sacred sites. They're important to tribes and specifically to our pueblos.
Great. And so could you speak a little bit to this particular effort, the Chaco effort, and what got you involved here?
Sure. So as a tribal member from Acoma Pueblo, we trace our ancestry to many different places in the Southwest, but Chaco Canyon specifically. And for the listeners, of course, Chaco Canyon is a precious place to our Pueblo communities and to all tribes in the Southwest. But, you know, to the general public and to all Americans, it's a place that needs to be protected. And so as we saw the threat of oil and gas development around the park encroach on the boundaries, many, many people, leadership, community members, advocates like myself got involved in this. And so we've been trying to use every means at our disposal to have an effect on policy, both locally and nationally.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about that specifically, the how you've been trying to affect policy both nationally and locally? What does that look like?
Well, the governor's Chairman Torres of the All Pueblo Council of Governors, along with Governor Curt Riley from the Pueblo of Acoma, Governor Michael Chavarria from the Pueblo of Santa Clara, and former governor and councilman Mark Mitchell from the Pueblo of Tizuki have all come out to Washington, D.C. this week to talk with members of Congress and to talk with the various different departments, the BLM, BIA, the Interior, about the need to protect the greater Chaco landscape. So, you know, part of what the governors want to see accomplished is really realizing that the park itself, the boundaries of the park, don't protect a lot of the outlier sites. There are many unexcavated great houses, ruins, and also cultural sites outside of the Chaco National Historic Park. And so the governors want to ensure that other sites that currently are outside of the boundary remain protected. And so they've been pushing for a boundary. It varies in some areas, but for the most part, it's about a 10-mile boundary around the Chaco National Historic Park that would exempt federal lands from leasing. And so this is very important because right now in New Mexico, there have been some lease sales of parcels very close to the park. And the governors and the pueblos have been concerned that with new technologies like horizontal drilling and fracking, that some of these new technologies will impact the integrity of the ruins. And of course, you know, the water, the ground itself, the animals, and the welfare of the people living around Chaco Park. And so they've been on the Hill this week talking with different folks, talking specifically about Senate Bill 2907, which is the Chaco Cultural Heritage Area Protection Act of 2018. And they have been working with Senator Heinrich and Senator Udall to get this legislation introduced and are now hopeful that with its passage, the greater Chaco landscape will be protected.
And what does the process look like from here to get that through?
Well, there are still a few hurdles. Right now, it is in the Senate Natural Resources Committee, and so it would need a markup there. It would also need House sponsors, and so it's still in the very beginning stages, but the governors were talking with some of the House members this week about possible House companion to the Senate bill.
And does it sound like there's a good chance of that happening?
I think it really depends on the outcome of the election. I think that there are some very, I think it's tough to say what, you know, what the fate of the bill will be at this point. But I think depending on the outcome of the election, we'll see how well it varies. I mean, I think in the Southwest, senators and Congress people are definitely interested in protecting it because they've been there and they've seen it and they know how important it is. I think the challenge for the governors is ensuring that members of Congress outside of the Southwest understand just how important this World Heritage Site is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't think you can go there and not understand how important it is or not appreciate it.
Right. And and they've, you know, the governors have invited, you know, members of Congress and other folks in the current administration to come out and so that they can host them to really show them how this is a living part of our culture and our religion. And it's not something that was abandoned, but is still, you know, a very vibrant part of our history, and our future. Last night we had a reception and Governor Riley from the Pueblo of Acoma, you know, explained that when he was talking with some school children that, the Pueblo had brought to Chaco that, you know, he pointed out to them, you know, look at these places. You can see here that our people were engineers, mathematicians, physicians, water conservators, and many, many other things, artists, and pointing out that that is in them, that that tradition still lives within them. And I think it's really a powerful message to our young people that, you know, that is the legacy that they come from. And that is what we can be in the future. And so it's a very important message that we have. It's part of our living history and definitely part of our future.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just purely if you just looked at the architecture, I mean, it is stunning. The level of detail and the amount of just sheer time it would have taken. It's really, when you take the time and really look at it, it's really... Yeah, it's just a really incredible place, and it really is one of those examples of where you can look at the archaeology and just see so much there behind it, like what he was saying.
No, I mean, I agree. Sometimes I struggle to, there's so much there, there's so much to learn, and I think, you know, Governor Riley's point is well taken that, you know, there's so many disciplines that went into making that place, the, you know, the great houses, to achieving these great structures, the astronomy, the study of the stars that took place in order to achieve some of the archaeological or astronomical observations, the alignment, of some of the houses in the Great North Road, I've even read papers about the acoustics of Pueblo Bonito and how it may have been aligned with other great house sites in the Chaco Canyon that so that the acoustics were good enough so that you could talk to other folks in other great houses across the canyon. And so, yeah, there are tons of lessons to be learned, including the governance. There were probably seven, maybe more languages spoken out of the thousands of people in Chaco Canyon. So just understanding how people can work together and live in a high desert basin, you know, where a lot of the farming was probably dry farming, was probably based on runoff. How do you achieve something like that?
Right, right. Let alone the fact that there aren't trees there and they have these giant beams in their architecture and, you know, how far away they had to go to get them and the water situation. It's all very impressive. They were making a point to be there. It was, yeah, it's a very interesting place that I feel like it took more than one visit for me to really start to appreciate.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's why it's exciting that the governors are here talking about it and really getting that message out to the general public outside of the Southwest. You know, how do we protect places like Chaco? I mean, there are numerous Great House sites and in the San Juan Basin, in the greater Chaco landscape. And then once we start talking about that, it's important that we look at, you know, other pieces of legislation that the governors have been talking about, like the Antiquities Act, and how we can be protecting other national monuments and you know, looking at Bears Ears, where we haven't even really scratched the surface of what you know, the history was like in Bears Ears. And yet some of it may be under threat.
Yeah. And what you were talking about there about great houses, I mean, so I'm in Colorado. I live in Cortez, Colorado, and we have great houses all the way over here. And I was just at a Colorado Archaeological Society conference, and they were talking about Chimney Rock National Monument and how they specifically built the architecture on a slope so that it would look like Chaco. So it would look multi-storied, even though it wasn't. So the Chaco landscape is vast. I mean, it crosses several states. It's really impressive in size. And you're just talking about the 10 miles really immediately outside the park.
Yeah. Yeah, the legislation creates a protection zone that's approximately 10 miles around the park. There's a portion in the south that protects one of the great houses that's near Crown Point, and then a portion in the north along the Great North Road that takes in a site called Pierre's site. And so really it's not that much when you think about you know, what's already been done in Farmington. So the Farmington Field Office of the BLM has already leased approximately 90% of that field office for oil and gas development. So when we're talking about this 10-mile buffer zone, it's actually a fraction of what's already been developed. And when we're talking about the human history, the long human story of you know, the Southwest and different migrations and all of these great houses and the culture and history there, it's a very small price to pay, I think, to protect, you know, a fraction of this 10% that's remaining.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit more about some of your more local efforts, yours and the governor's more local efforts?
Yeah. In New Mexico, the All Pueblo Council of Governors have passed several resolutions that call for the protection of Chaco at a state, regional, and national level. One of the other points that the resolutions ask for is that there be an ethnographic study conducted before any other lease sales are done. So we get, you know, sort of annual or semi-annual lease sales in the BLM Farmington office. And before any more lease sales are done, the governors of the All Pueblo Council of Governors have asked that there be a rigorous ethnographic study conducted so that we hear from Pueblo cultural leaders what is still out there, what may not be excavated, what cultural sites need to be avoided by development. And if there's an area that doesn't have any cultural sites in it, a parcel, you know, making that known too to BLM. So I think that their biggest concern is that there's a lack of consultation. There needs to be more than just a literature search done before development is conducted, and really to bring the tribes to the table and have them really study the landscape, work with archaeologists to create that ethnographic survey.
Yeah, absolutely. And not just because I'm an ethnographer. No, that is hugely important. Like I've said many times on this podcast, if you are not considering traditional cultural properties, which can only be identified by the people who identify with them. So in this case, the tribes. So through either tribal monitors, tribal consultation, or an ethnographic study, then you have not fulfilled your Section 106 requirements of the National Historic Preservation Act. So something like this, an ethnographic study, it just, I mean, honestly, in my opinion, but then again, I'm an ethnographer, I think should be standard practice as part of 106. But at least, you know, otherwise tribal monitors, again, tribal consultation done correctly. So I just think that that's hugely important and something that's oddly missing from Chaco. I mean, I know of at least one ethnographic study for the park itself, but, you know, for such a hugely documented on the archaeology side area and phenomena, there's been very little, it seems like, interactions with tribes on that front.
Yeah, I mean, I think that for something this iconic and this important to not have a comprehensive ethnographic study is, you know, there's no reason for it. There are other sites that have been studied extensively. And you know, I think that one of the, some of the pushback has been about budget and, you know, the sheer cost of such a, you know, expansive study. But, you know, I think that for something this important, it's something that should be done. And especially when we do look at all of the well pads and the development that's happened in the BLM Farmington office, when we see that, that it's almost blacked out, when we look at these maps that are almost blacked out with well pads, you know, I think it's a pretty small price to pay to continue to learn from this place.
Well, and to do it right and in a thoughtful way and everything like you mentioned beforehand. Absolutely. Okay, so you're advocating for an ethnographic study. Is there anything else that has been done so far towards that end?
Yes. So the APCG, All Pueblo Council of Governors, has asked for an ethnographic study to be conducted with descendant nations, Pueblo nations, before any new leases are put up on the auction block of parcels near the park. And I think that that's an ongoing request, is that we defer these lease sales. There's one coming up in December. And it's interesting too, that the way that BLM has been doing it is this online method for leasing, you know, auctioning these parcels for development. And, you know, I think part of that is, you know, they don't want to have protests, because they know that not only would tribes protest, but I think the general public would if they had the opportunity. And so I think a lot of the, you know, the way that it's done is problematic. So, you know, there is a ongoing lease sale at the same time that the BLM is conducting the resource management plan amendment process. And, that's another concern, is that there's this ongoing process, this dialogue that's supposed to be taking place between the public, the tribes, the federal government, to determine sort of how development moves forward in this area. And yet they're still leasing these parcels so close to the park. So, you know, I think for a lot of the tribes there's a deep concern that any buffer zone could be done away with, and that we would have development very near the park and more development in some of these outlier sites.
Okay. Well, on that note, we are going to take a quick break. All right, we'll be right back.
This network is listener supported. We're trying to move away from paid advertising while also creating new shows and supporting the ones we have. Every little dime we make goes back into the network and improving show quality. So become a member today at www.arcpodnet.com/members to show your support, get some extras, and be a benefactor for archaeological education. Members get stickers, a coffee mug, a t-shirt, bonus content, early access to episodes, a private Slack team to talk to other members and the hosts, and full access to training on Team Black over at arccert.black. So check out our memberships at www.arcpodnet.com/members today and support archaeological education. That's www.arcpodnet.com/members. Now back to the show.
All right, and we are back. So continuing a little bit on that topic that we were talking about right then, could you maybe talk a little bit about tribal consultation and what you would like to see or how you think that could be improved?
Sure. So federal law does require tribal consultation, and not only adequate tribal consultation, but meaningful consultation. So it's not enough to check the box by coming back to the tribes and saying, okay, here's what we've decided. And, so now we've had a discussion or meeting with one of the Pueblos. There are 19. And so it's really important that the field offices make every attempt to bring the tribes into the process. Regarding Chaco, several tribes and I believe several chapters are cooperators in the process, which sort of elevates or is supposed to elevate their position in this consultation process so that they work together with BLM to come out with a plan moving forward that really takes into consideration the tribal perspective as the descendants, the direct descendants of the Chacoan people. And so, we really haven't seen enough consultation, even with cooperator status granted through this resource management plan amendment process. And so I think the governors have been discussing with the administration this week here in Washington, D.C., and members of Congress, how do we improve that relationship? How do we ensure that these concerns are taken, that are made part of a plan so that moving forward, development is done in a way that works with the tribes. And again, one way to do that would be to have an ethnographic study to be able to have cultural leaders, religious leaders in the field looking at parcels, looking at this buffer zone to ensure that, there isn't a new development put over a great house site or, any other cultural site. And so I think that we're not quite there yet. And so I think there's concern, there's some worry that that due diligence hasn't been done. But I hope that that improves because the resource management plan amendment process for the Farmington Field Office is set to conclude soon.
Okay. So what other advice or guidance would you give to other tribes, maybe in other parts of the country, who face a similar challenge?
Well, I think that, what the governors have been doing for decades now is working together to affect change. And they've done so many great things. They've been able to protect some of these sacred sites and have really been champions of the public lands fights. I think they're sort of the unsung heroes of the fights for public lands. Bears Ears, Rio Grande del Norte, the Oregon Mountains, Desert Peaks. The governors have all been there playing a role to protect these places for all people because they are public lands, because Pueblo people still use these places. Go on pilgrimages to these places. And so, I really want to lift up their contribution to protecting national monuments and our parks And so, you know, I think that this is happening all across the country. And I think we should really look at the contribution that the tribes have been making through 1906 and the original Antiquities Act all the way to today. Sorry, Jessica, that didn't really answer your question, but
it's okay. It was great. It was a good point, though. I mean, did you want to speak to the question, to the other, or should I move on?
Sure. So can you tell me it again?
So it was about just kind of like maybe either like what's worked well or what you would recommend to other tribes like facing similar fights.
So I think what's worked well with the fight to protect Chaco Canyon and the greater Chaco region is the fact that the governors have a centuries-old consortium, the All Pueblo Council of Governors. This council began meeting after the Pueblo Revolt and is older than many institutions in the U.S., and they've met consistently, annually, for hundreds of years, and it continues to this day. And so I think that having their leadership and their guidance to continue this fight has enabled all of our communities to be engaged in it. And I think is a model for how we protect sacred sites across the country.
Yeah, that's amazing. You don't build that kind of relationship overnight, that's for sure.
Right.
So to close out, and thank you again for coming on, and thank you again to Chairman Torres and former Governor Mitchell as well for the other part of the episode. So I'm going to close out with the same question I closed out with them, which was just where can people go to learn more? What resources are out there? And also if somebody hears this episode and they're fired up to do something to help out with Chaco, what would you recommend? What would be most helpful?
Right. Well, if folks want to learn more about sort of the latest from the tribes and from the governors, they can go to the Facebook page. It's the Protect Greater Chaco Facebook page, and they can learn more about the campaign to protect Chaco and all of its outlier sites. They can also learn a little bit more about the Senate bill that Senator Heinrich and Senator Udall have co-sponsored. That's Senate Bill 2907. And I will send you the link, Jessica, so you can put that in the show notes.
Great.
And I think there's a lot of grassroots organizing happening, and there are different ways to get involved. And I think in the spring we'll be posting some events that people can come to. Hopefully we can get out to Chaco Canyon itself.
All right. Well, we will definitely make sure we get all of that and as well as the links mentioned in the first part of the episode on the show notes. And thank you again, Keegan, for coming on and speaking with us.
Yeah. Thank you, Jessica.
Thanks for listening to the Heritage Voices podcast. You can find show notes at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/Heritage Voices. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes,
Stitcher, or the Google Music Store.
Also, if you like the show, please share with your friends or write us a review. If you have any questions, comments, or show suggestions, please reach out to me at jessica@livingheritageanthropology.org, or you can find me on Facebook through Living Heritage Anthropology or on Twitter @LivingHeritageA. As always, thank you to Lyle Blanqua and Jason Nez for their collaboration on our incredible logo.
This show is produced by the Archaeology Podcast Network, Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle in Reno, Nevada at the Reno Collective.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.